The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Starting off the new year with a full studio today. We have three cybersecurity experts in the studio. We have a little discussion about some recent happenings in the world of cybersecurity and the report from the president that came out last month. And maybe we'll get some bold predictions about what's going to happen in the next 12 months with the new administration. That's what I want to hear. And we're going to commit you all to that and put it in granite and hold your feet to the fire in 1 year. Our three experts today. We have Alex Grohman. He's a founder and president of Secret Consulting. We have John Dyson from Deloitte and Brian Gay, president of a company called Think Forward. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Morning.
Excellent. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Well, I got up early this morning and I went to LinkedIn and I looked up all your profiles and whew, boy, I'm certainly not the smartest guy in this room. All kinds of fancy degrees here. I'm just kind of a radio guy amazed. CISSP, CISA, CISM, MBA. Alex, how many letters do you have after your name?
Apparently not enough because there's not a JR underneath it. So it's the only one I got to get next, right?
Yeah. Tell us about your background, please, Alex.
I'm a technology expert for many, many years now. I'm currently an independent consultant. I've done a lot of work with federal governments, local governments, quasi-governments. My current client's the power company, so I'm doing a lot of work with the NERC frameworks and a lot of other challenging things that some of our energy companies are now experiencing in the industry.
20 years experience, and you're affiliated with this little startup group called Mach 37, is that right?
Yes, Mach 37 is the cybersecurity accelerator for the state of Virginia. It's run out of the CIT out in Sterling, Virginia. Wonderful organization. They're able to help people with technologies, turn those technologies into a marketable product, and then also lead them down a path where they're able to meet up with investors at the end of this training program, which is pretty much a three-month MBA program.
Brian P. Gay, talk about your background and how you can help my listeners.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I started Think4 Consulting about 10 years ago after some stops at some larger companies, Accenture, SAIC. Background was really in enterprise architecture, kind of building mission systems and kind of figuring out how those align to the organization with its IT assets. Took a pivot about 8 or 7 years ago looking at cybersecurity information assurance, thought that was something that was going to be pretty prominent coming up in the next several years. Right now we're kind of supporting a myriad of federal customers, commercial customers, really heavy into the cloud, FedRAMP, a lot of things towards that. And actually, one of the things that I want to preach is talk about today is in this cybersecurity framework. So I think that's something that's going to be coming up and emerging pretty strong, and I'd love to kind of dive into that and see how that impacts some of the people listening.
CISSP also.
Yes.
So this.
Don't forget PMP.
Got
to get the PMI credit too.
You've got all kinds of stuff.
I pay my dues. So I want to make sure I get credit for that as well.
And I think the most important letters for you are your website, which is thinkfc.com for more information. That's great. Well, I don't know about you, John. John Dyson, can you match these two smart guys? What's your background? PhD from Harvard or something?
I'm the driver, actually. I got to hit the meter, in 30 minutes for him. Now, my background, basically 20 years in different fields of cybersecurity, running SOCs, being an analyst, that sort of thing. But about 6 or 7 years ago, also did a little bit of a pivot looking at the audit side, dropping phrases like NIST 853, FedRAMP, going around doing it for both federal and government customers, looking at the controls. And really, again, like Brian said, is NIST 853 really the way to go? Is it the way forward? And, that's I think, a big question.
I had some folks in from OMB, and I had a couple auditors in the studio. And he said he usually walks into a room and they don't like him, but after he leaves,
right.
What they surprisingly do is they actually write down his suggestions and implement them. And so it's like, oh, I don't want to see this dentist. I don't want to see the dentist. And you walk out with a nice smile or something. So it's kind of a, I don't know if I'm going to put that in your card. Maybe consultant and not
right.
Auditor.
You know? That's right. So you're saying I should give up free toothbrushes or something when I go in. Got it.
Yeah, auditor's not going to make friends. Not at all.
You're absolutely right.
Well, here you go. You walk down the street, you go into 7-Eleven, you get a Slurpee, and you walk out with a newspaper, and cybersecurity is every single page of the newspaper. I mean, you can't help but avoid seeing it everywhere.
And I think the federal government has been instrumental in trying to avoid some of the mess. And we're certainly not going to name names about what's happened, what hasn't happened. But I think cybersecurity is top of mind, I think, in the first week in January for most of my listeners. And by the way, my listeners are federal IT professionals. You know, get up at 9 o'clock, you know, get to work at 9 o'clock in the morning. By 9:15, they're dialing suicide hotline, frustrated. They don't know what to do. They're trying this, they're trying that. And so they'll type in cybersecurity, wind up at federalnewsradio.com and listen to some interviews. And so, Brian, from your perspective, you know, let's say a guy's sitting out a doy interior out and resting there, and he's trying to figure out how to manage the move to the cloud and considering all these frameworks. So tell us about what NIST has come up with. Maybe give us a historical perspective on all these changes, because there's FISMA from years ago. Then more recently, in 2014, there was a presidential directive, and then it's been replanted here in December. Give us a framework of what's going on here.
Sure. First, I wanted to defend FISMA a little bit, because, again, I said I started kind of doing enterprise architecture a long time ago, and that was the Clear-Cohen Act, which I don't think anyone even references anymore. Clear-Cohen was intended to be kind of the parallel to FISMA. And what it did, it didn't do, is it didn't define really standards or governance or recommendations, which NIST is basically done for FISMA. So NIST gets a lot of credit and deserves a lot of kudos for what they've done. So I think we need to look at that lens and say, yes, we're in a very compliance-driven organization or framework, but without it, we would have nothing. We'd have no standards. Really, no one is doing enterprise architecture anymore. It became a paper exercise. So I think that's one thing we need to look at the history and say, gosh, we're not where we should be, but we've come a long way, because we could be like enterprise architecture, which is dormant. So cybersecurity is top of mind, but that's because it's a lot of people are pushing it towards the next level. So really, as we kind of sit here in 2016, it's everywhere. It's on I checked the front page of the Washington Post again. It is prominent, but really, what are we doing about it is the question. I mean, sure, you know, there's all things. From a federal standpoint, you know, we've got a lot of things that we need to look at and change. And we're going into the cloud. We're going to digital strategy. We're going to mobile. And all these things, we're talking about boundaryless environments, whatever that means. You know, we're going to basically, everyone's going to be everywhere sharing information. So I think we need to look at the construct of FISMA and where it needs to go next, and with the cybersecurity framework and those kind of things. So, you know, it's more questions to ask, because, yeah, if you're sitting in a federal agency and you're like, gosh, I've got this IT program that now my budget's going to be cut. How do I do the same thing with less? Oh, I'm going to go to the cloud. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go buy Amazon Web Services, and I will solve every problem. And the CISO is probably sitting there going, oh, my God, I've got another proliferation of a cloud no one told me about. So, you know, the first thing you need to do is you need to build the relationship with the security team. You need to go with them and say, here's my business problem. Help me solve that. Allow the CISO shop to say, well, here's some alternatives you have. Here's some clouds we've used. And you know, if you're procuring IT or anything in the federal government now, and the CISO needs to do the same thing, they need to bridge across the aisle and say, what does my mission need to do? How do I become an advocate for that? So that's kind of where we are and where I see the next things going in a nutshell. I mean, I see, you know, the NIST cybersecurity framework, I think we're going to dive really into a little bit later, but that's the next iteration of where enterprise risk management is going to go. FISMA is going to exist. 853 series is going to be prominent. But to be really board-centric and business-centric, we need to kind of get away from, are you satisfying AC2 and AC4? We need to say is, how are we doing with protect, identify, detect? So that's, I think, where we're moving to. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what it's going to look like. This commission report is thrilling. So I think everyone should read it and see. It was pretty nonpartisan and non-biased. So I think that's kind of, if I'm sitting on the federal side looking for the next level, I need to move and look at those kind of things.
Alex Grohman, what's this report he just mentioned?
The presidential report was a report mandated by President Obama. He got together some really incredibly smart people, including our good friend Steve Chubinsky. They were given a task of saying, hey, look, there is a major problem in the federal government. We're not striving far enough. We're not reaching out far enough. We've got some good frameworks such as FISMA and out that. But what's really the bigger challenges? What are some of the big home runs that we could potentially do? These smart people were given a limited amount of time to be able to come up with this report, which just came out in December 6th. So the report is phenomenal. It's really kind of, it had some things that are a little bit more like, oh, okay, yeah, I see that. But it's also a little bit more far-reaching ideas. I highly suggest anybody who has an opportunity to look at the report, it'll, you know, take a little bit of time, but it really kind of helps meld a direction of where the federal government can go. What are some of the big hitters? Where do the thinking big? A lot of times the technology, especially with information security, we're very bound by, with almost like blinders like the horse. We've got to be like, okay, we've got to work on this control. We've got to work on this. We've got an audit coming up here. We've got this. And it's really, you're very kind of, you're very blinded a lot of times. You can't think big. You can't think like, wow, what's possible out there, because you're so kind of buried into the weeds. So this report kind of helps everybody like, wow, this is where the federal government could go in a larger frame.
Let's take a break. We come back, we'll see what information John Dyson wants to share with us about this president's report from in December. More information on Alex, you can find him on LinkedIn, Alex, GROHMANN, and link into him. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Alex Grohman, we have John Dyson and Brian Gay. We're talking about cybersecurity in the federal government. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Starting off the year with a discussion about cybersecurity, talking about a president's report that was issued in December. In the studio, we have Alex Grohman. We have John Dyson and Brian Gay. Brian Gay is the president of Think Forward. You can go to thinkfc.com for more information about him. Before the break, we started mentioning this presidential report that came out in December. Now, boy, my brain's kind of confused, but I remember in the springtime there was an RFI that came out. I think people were seeking information on and how to enhance the enterprise architecture of the federal government. John Dyson, is that true, or what happened in the springtime? Am I just thinking about the pitchers and batters reporting, or did that actually happen?
No, you're right on the money. The Commission Enhancing National Cybersecurity. They basically took a bunch of high-profile guys, traveled them around the country to meet with different industries, different universities, to try to figure out what forward-thinking changes could be made within the infrastructure for the internet, to figure out how can we make things better is the short version. These guys went all around, talked to a lot of people. They flew them all over the place. And in December, they came out with a report, handed it to the president, said, here's what we think the next administration should do. Here's not what you need today to fix stuff, but going forward. They have short-term, they have moderate, they have long-term goals where they should look to make fixes, make changes, improvements.
Now, Alex, maybe you can put this in perspective. Now, there's something called FISMA, and there's something called this framework. What are the differences, and how does that affect my listeners?
FISMA is a directive, I believe, in 2002. It was with the federal government. We needed to mandate some day-to-day standards. If you look at that, the FISMA is the actual, I forget exactly what the acronym even stands for, but this is what all the federal agencies must, their internal security departments must meet to be able to meet this mandate. So FISMA is relying on several different pieces of information, mainly around the 800 series documents that were made by NIST. NIST is the Institute of Standards and Technology. So therefore, they were the natural organization to be able to handle, you know, coming up with standards that are going to be used throughout all the different agencies.
Now, 2017, I mean, dog years, exactly. That would be a pretty old standard, wouldn't it?
Internet years, yes. That's even longer.
Yeah, internet years is a lot worse than dog years. Huh?
Yeah.
And so where's FISMA today?
FISMA today is actually getting a little bit more mature. If you look at some of the 800 series documents, they're special publications by NIST. They're pretty mature now. They've gotten to a good place, and most of the federal agencies have been able to implement them. But again, they're basic level controls. They're basically how you do access control, how you do identity and access management, some of the very basic tenets of security. However, there is some limitations with this, and it was never designed to be anything more than really kind of giving you the good standards. But it does have some limitations because it really needs kind of a little bit more marrying of what the objective of an organization is. Now, in companies, usually you work in an internal security department, you work with the business. You say, okay, well, here, what is important to us? Is it something that we have an online presence on our website cannot be down? Availability is incredibly important. Or, hey, if we're of a bank and we do this, and we got to make sure our interest rates or some type of internal data is vital that the integrity is then more important. Or maybe if you're an agency where you have a intellectual property and you're worried about confidentiality. So therefore, you base your controls on, as a reaction to each one of those different items, what's important to you. FISMA and a lot of these documentations, the biggest one would be 853, written by a fine gentleman named Ron Ross and his team. They give you the basics about, okay, here's what you need to do, but it's not just a checklist, but it's a wide range of things that you need to do. But again, it can't really look at exactly, it's flexible, but really the directives a lot of times that we don't have is that, okay, hey, look, I've got to really be really focused on this area, but I can ease up on this. Because really there's going to be a standard that says you need to comply with all of these different areas. So it's a little bit missing the boat sometimes.
Yeah. Right. NIST is kind of involved into, or the NIST 853 is involved into a checklist. We must do all A, B, C, D, and E. So when you've got solutions that say, you know, run on a mainframe, but there's a requirement that says you need an antivirus. So you've got people rushing to find how they can put an antivirus solution on the mainframe. But from a day-to-day perspective, there's no real risk there. But from a checklist perspective, and in a lot of ways, NIST 853 has become a checklist. And that's where I think a lot of things have to change.
Brian Gay, 3 miles from here, a guy named Alan Paler resides, and he runs this little group called the SANS Institute. And he has a divergent opinion of some of the things that we're talking about. Now, he does mostly with commercial stuff, but also has he opines about federal issues. What does he think about all this? You know Alan, don't you? Everyone knows Alan.
Yeah, I mean, again, SANS is an amazing institute. And what we do, you know, when we walk into a customer and we walk anywhere, we look at their top 20, right? Because they, you know, first of all, I always joke, and I think it's true, is there's a reason phone numbers are 7 digits long, right? Because that's all a human can remember, 7 digits, right? So if we talk about all the NIST 800 controls and families, people can't remember that. So SANS has distilled this down to 20 or so really what they think are the kind of that core pieces that are required. So we've got a commercial customer. We leverage this NIST cybersecurity framework and metrics and the SANS top 20 and actually integrated them and built them. So it's a much more business focused. It allows you to have communications across the board. And so, you know, I think when SANS and CSF merge together, there's going to be a lot more powerful conversation. So, yeah, I mean, I think 853 has a place at the system level, but at the board level, the CISO level, and you know, this is one of the things I think the new administration is going to be very business focused. So imagine they're going to run this a lot more like boards. So if the CISO is walking in there and saying is, hey, listen, I need a new antivirus, it's not going to really resonate. But if they look and say, look, you know, my Protect portfolio is way down, I need to improve it. And they're going to say, okay, come back with $100,000 and prove it to me. So I think, you know, SANS has done a really nice job kind of getting down to the meat. And I think that's where this cybersecurity framework is going to go. And I see FISMA kind of going in that direction too.
John Dyson, back in 2014, the first framework was issued called version 1. Some people estimate that 30% of commercial enterprises kind of align up with some of this framework information. Do you think that's true? It seems high to me.
It's a toss-up, really. If they had to have a main competitor, it would be COBIT. In anyone that's doing the Sarbanes-Oxley stuff will know COBIT in detail. But NIST has made huge strides. It's essentially united the government, if you will. I mean, the intelligence agency uses NIST 853. All the civilian agencies use it. So it's one of the few standards that the entire government has actually embraced as a solution in a direction. And I think that's just bleeding into industry. And I think it will get more and more in industry. But I don't know if it'll ever push out COBIT since the requirements around SOX really go down that road as well.
Alex Grohman, I got a curveball for you here. Mm-hmm. If you look what's happened in the last 6 or 7 weeks, a little company called Yahoo had a breach. And a couple million people, billion? Oh, almost a billion mm-hmm. people, I think. So from the perspective of, and some people still have Yahoo email addresses, by the way. I mean, incredibly. So how can this structure help people at Yahoo? How can that prevent my cousin in Chicago from not getting hit?
Well, first of all, the breaches now, they're commonplace. You look at the news every day and you see them. And Yahoo, did anybody really even bat an eye? I'm curious how many listeners.
You get desensitized to it, don't you?
I'm curious how many listeners out there are listening and says, yes, I have a Yahoo account. When they read about that breach, how many of them actually changed their password?
Right.
We're becoming desensitized about this. So how does some of the different frameworks out there, what it does is these frameworks and these the reports, they help everybody like see the big picture. Okay. So these things are like, wow, you know, the things may be like, wow, I thought about this, or like, wow, you know what? I didn't think about this, or hey, somebody else is seeing things. A lot of internal security departments are, again, very blinded. They're doing their day-to-day items to get through the day. You know, they've got budgets that are out there. We need new tools that are barely keeping up. They're constantly asking for money from boards, or if you're a federal agency, from some higher ups. It's hard to keep up. So, you know, with these things, how are they going to help? It's giving them some guidance, you know, enterprise architecture, you're talking about things that are architecture in general, you know, how things are going to be able to see the big picture. that's where it's going to help. It's going to give them also a sanity check. It says, hey, look, this is some of the best practices we're doing. This is where these things really, if people are taking the time to say, hey, stop, let me read this report. These reports are incredibly detailed. They're incredibly well thought of by some of our brightest people in the industry right now. But really, the first step is making sure that everybody reads these things.
Brian Gay, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to take a break. When I've raised three kids and taught them how to drive. And I would just about, I mean, they couldn't even look at a car without thinking about putting on a seatbelt. I mean, that's it. You know, in the time they're 2 years old, I have a seatbelt, and they have seatbelts now. I worked with a guy about 10 years ago who had a brand new Mercedes-Benz, and he had a seatbelt on. It was clipped, and he sat on it. And so what he did is he did the checklist. He didn't have the seatbelt clipped, but so the idea is checklist items. I mean, and so what good is a checklist item, and how does it integrate with the real world? And maybe we can apply that to the world of cybersecurity, and that's some criticism of FISMA, and I don't know if that's going to be criticism of this new framework. And we get back, we'll talk about that, maybe ask John Dyson some questions about this December report and how it's going to impact my listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Speaking of the brightest in the world, we have three of the brightest in the studio today. We have Alex Grohman, John Dyson, and Brian Gay. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we're talking about cybersecurity, talking about a presidential report that was issued about a month ago. In the studio, we have Alex Grohman, we have John Dyson, and we have Brian Gay. And bounced around a lot of different topics back and forth and back and forth. In the break, we talked about maturity level. And over Christmas, my wife constantly told everyone that I wasn't very mature because during Christmas dinner, I was singing my famous chicken pot pie song. It was pretty good, but it was immature. In the break, we talked about maturity level. Is this what this is all about, maturity level for cybersecurity, this report that's issued and looking forward? So how do you view this, Brian?
Well, I think the report does definitely more than maturity level. But what it does, again, it says, look at adopting, embracing the CSF. And this cybersecurity framework has four maturity tiers in there. So what it's doing is allowing organizations to say, I can't start on third base, or what is reasonable for me? And this is one of the things it's really interesting. And we've got boots on the ground with a customer, and we've kind of noodled back and forth, and they're international customer, $500 million in revenue, but should they be a 2? Should they be a 3? Should they be a 4? What is reasonable, right? And maturity starts allowing you to answer those questions. And what we've done is some really interesting things about saying is, okay, we're going to look at baseline against your peers. Because the joke is, and I use this every time, is you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the other guy. Even in cybersecurity, I think the analogy fits. Because if you look at it, if an organization has threats and vulnerabilities against them, and someone's looking to penetrate, and like, wow, these guys are pretty sophisticated, it's really hard to get in there, I'm going to move to the next guy. So the adversary is going to look for the less mature, less sophisticated organization. So I think maturity is very important, but it's also finding the right level of maturity. And what the CSF does, it allows you to look at maturity across the functions, the five functions, and an aggregate, and allows you to say, well, should I be very strong and identify, or should be very strong and recover? Because we realize that protect and identify are kind of the main functions all of industry is focused on. Firewalls, boundary protections, access controls. But people are still getting in because you're not patching systems or you're not recovering time. So maybe you can move to incident response. So it allows you to kind of play with that. And those tiers, I think, are very important because, you know, as you talk higher and higher level, and security is going to get, it's at the board level right now. It's at the C level. It's a CEO level. And they don't care about the granular stuff. They may say, what maturity level am I at? So it's that next iteration. So it's even, you know, I think maturity is the way it's going to go. And it's people are going to start saying, what percentage of controls are satisfied? They're going to say, am I a 2? Am I a 3? And how do I get to a 3? And how much does it cost me to do that? And then you start really having dollar conversations.
Yeah, it's the old backup argument. I want 100% backup. Well, how much are you willing to pay for it? And
what's the incremental cost? Exactly.
John Dyson, got a curveball question for you here.
All right.
When it comes to standards and accreditation, I have somewhat of a background in that general area. So my question, should NIST be the ones who come up with these standards? Or should it be an independent trade association or an organization? You know, aerospace engineers use this group called SAE, which is Society of Automotive Engineers, but they use a lot of SAE standards. And so should independent groups separate from the federal government responsible, or should the federal government be responsible for this structure?
I think NIST is unique. I think NIST really is independent. You don't want Department of Commerce to come up with their own standards because maybe another department won't pick it up. NIST, NIST will can create these independent standards. So I really think that's where it should land. I think they are the right place. Now, really, the for government, that will work. But now we start stepping back saying, what does industry want to adopt something that the government has come up with? And I think that's where that transition is really going to be a problem. And it might just have to be mandated by government. But again, industry doesn't really like to have that happen to them. So COBIT is something that came out by an industry organization. And those are the two competitors in the field right now. I think for a standard from the government, NIST is absolutely the way to go. Will there ever be one that's standard for both industry and government? I don't know who would come out with that. I don't think right now there's any organization that could field both sides of that.
So, Alex, tell us more about this report and some of the conclusions of this report that came out in December from the president's office.
Has a lot of the basic things that you'll be looking at, you know, help improving cyber education, and that, but also looks at a little bit more far over thinking about some of the technical parts of things out, how we can get ahead of the different the gaping holes that we still have in the industry. Okay, so with the federal, with this industry, again, pulling from, I believe it has public and private, they both talk about this. They came up with these suggestions, and they said, hey, look, here is the better roadmap. Now, we can go into the details about that, but the bigger problem is, you know, we're about to change administrations, about how this report was coming out right at a time where it's kind of almost a crack. It's like, okay, last administration requested it, but the new administration is coming in from a different party and all that stuff. It doesn't matter about politics, but the fact is it's coming in at a particular part of time where, okay, is it going to be adopted because it was done by a different administration? So, The particulars about are phenomenal. Again, I hope everybody actually has the time to kind of take some time to look at it. But really, I am more concerned about how is this going to be used. This is a phenomenal report put together, again, by very bright people. But is it going to fall on, is it going to reach the target audience? Is it really going to be like, wow, this is a phenomenal thing that we have on our hands, and we're going to actually go ahead and implement it. We're going to go ahead and take some of these recommendations they have and run with it, even though it was by a different administration. Again, no politics inside, but it's just logically, is that going to happen? And I'm a little fearful about that. I really hope that the new administration comes in and says, wow, this really is something that's phenomenal. Let's see what we can do, and let's move forward with it.
Brian, I've been listening to you. You seem to be very knowledgeable. Many of my listeners are trying to get a handle on the whole idea of cybersecurity and FISMA and NIST and this president's report. So what stuff do you read to keep up?
Oh, geez. One of the things is obviously just staying ahead and looking at the blogs, like Brian Krebs. I mean, has a lot of kind of business focused, and at the end, the Washington Post actually does a good job kind of covering the political angles. One of the things is I don't read much on the cybersecurity side. I stay engaged with people I trust and my peers. And I'll ping them through the day. I'll ask them questions. What do you think about the RMF? What do you think about DevOps? What do you think about this? Because I really want to kind of have that conversation with them. And because I don't think we know the answers to a lot of things. And I think I really want to trust the people. I want to reach out to people I trust, like Alex and John and some of my peers on some of my contracts, even customers I've dealt with throughout the years that are doing bigger and better things. Like, hey, what are you doing to solve this problem? Industry magazines are great. For Federal News Radio, I stay engaged for kind of what's happening for, the governance and where the industry may be going. But for kind of the thought leadership, I really talk to peers instead.
So your company does federal and commercial work, is that right?
That's correct.
And so is there a specific vertical market, maybe banking or communications or in the commercial world, what areas do you work in?
The commercial, it's more kind of the research and advisory firms that have significant IT footprints, global companies. Those that really have a challenge of they don't want to do security and IT for a living. They bring us in to do kind of strategic special forces operations. They're saying we need this 6-month thing done. We need to move to the cloud. So where we're kind of surge and allow them. So, as far as verticals, we have, we'll go anywhere, but really it's the companies that don't want to do cybersecurity for their bread and butter because we're expensive and it comes very costly, but they want to implement something and then have us leave and come back. So that's kind of the industry we focus on.
John Dyson, same question to you, but I want to ask about Twitter. Brian Krebs is pretty active on Twitter. I think a lot of journalists like Brian and Rob Pegoraro, they view Twitter as kind of a stream to see what kind of topics to follow and not follow. What do you read to keep up?
I do keep up on Krebs is a fantastic place. You know, a lot of the Twitter feeds. But really, that is just like you said. It's a place to get ideas where to start looking. You're not going to get great depth of information on that from Twitter. But what's the hot topic? What are the things you're looking at? I like looking at some of the NIST docs when they come out. We're publishing a new one, 800- some large number. These are topics that NIST feels are important. I happen to be a big fan of a lot of the things that Ron Ross puts out. I mean, when he walks into a room and starts talking, I want to take a lighter out and hold it up and, sway and cheer. What are the things that are on NIST mind? From the government perspective, that's a great place to look. Again, from an industry, a lot of experts in the field, Twitter, get you an idea of what's on their mind as well.
Good answer. Let's take a break, come back. Talk more about the future of cybersecurity in the federal government. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Troika today, Alex Grohman, John Dyson, and Brian Gay. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Alex Grohman, we have John Dyson, and we have Brian Gay. We're talking about cybersecurity. We bounced around several different topics, talked about frameworks, enterprise architecture, talk about NIST, and this is like a 30-hour discussion, and this is right in the middle of a change in administration. So this is almost like we're all on a sailboat, we're outside of Catalina Island, we're ready to go somewhere, and we have no idea where we're going to go. We have to generally go west. We don't know how we're going to go there. Do we tack south, north? Where's the wind? We have no wind. We're just sitting there in the doldrums waiting to what's going to happen. And on January 20th, I think something's going to happen. So it's hard to predict what's going to happen here in the next 6 months. But John Dyson, that's not going to stop me from asking you. So where do you see this whole world of cybersecurity frameworks, NIST? What's going to happen here in the next 6 months?
I think we're actually going to finally start moving away from control-based security and start moving toward risk-based security. I think with a boardroom atmosphere, we're going to start seeing risk is going to be the important phrase to drop, not controls. Controls will still be around, but like I said, we're going to move away from control-based. We're going to start going risk-based.
Risk-based. Alex, do you agree?
Disagree.
Oh, boy. Let's hear it.
I believe the intent what John has about the risk base is absolutely correct. However, I still think there's still a lack of understanding about how security works. And I think a controls base is something that you do have a checklist or something like that. It's something a little bit more tangible that some people on the board or higher ups in an organization are going to be able to understand better than really kind of risk. Until we really get our arms around risk, and I've seen some organizations that do it well, but most organizations don't understand risk and overall how they understand things, enterprise risk. How does that really kind of come out there? So I don't think in 5 years, if that was the time frame, I pray to gosh I am incorrect about that. But unfortunately, 5 years is a very quick amount of time in technology, and I really don't see us moving that quickly to that. It would be phenomenal, but sorry, John. You're dreaming, buddy. You're dreaming.
Well, Brian Gay, these two guys are dreaming. I was talking to someone over at Commerce, a guy who runs a data center. He's using artificial intelligence to help manage his data center. I thought that was dumb. Where does artificial intelligence fit in? And give me your 5-year prediction for this whole mess we're in here.
I guess I'll answer the AI question first. So I thought we have to call it machine learning, right? Because people are scared about
machine
the robots
learning.
Taking
That's
over.
The shift. That's the
yeah.
Shift.
So machine learning. Again, one of the things is I guess I want to talk about. I think FISMA is going to be around, but I think there's going to be an edict that you cannot have all these paper processes. So I'm imagining that machine learning and all these things, we're going to look to automate everything we can because it's just a waste of time and money. So I think AI is going to come around. I think machine learning, but part of it is just the amount of data. What do you do with all that data? That's what people are saying. And can computers learn and do things that humans do? I think absolutely in some cases. I think operational. I think, there's even talks about when computers go down, they can automatically turn themselves back on. When they're missing a patch, they can go find that patch and download that patch. So I think there are specific things where machine learning is going to be very applicable in large data centers and scalable. I mean, we do a lot of Amazon Web Services work, and it is amazing what Amazon Web Services is building in their platform. So they're going to allow you to do kind of healthy self-healing environment. So absolutely, that's going to happen 5 years from now. I mean, in the federal space, I think one thing is going to happen in the near term is, I hate to argue against Alex, but I think we're going to go towards a more board mentality. Oh. I think it's going to be a dog-eat-dog world. And as the CISO is going to come up, if they can justify where their money's going to better than the other people in the mission, they're going to get the money they ask for. And this environment is going to be much more corporate-faced and much more, you know, it's going to be less of a bureaucracy and more, hey, this is my CISO. He has a budget. He's got to justify it. If he doesn't justify it, I'm going to cut it. So that's what I see. And technology, the five-year gap, this is amazing. I'd imagine we're not going to have wallets anymore. Everything's going to be on our phone. We're going to have digital chips. We're going to get rid of 7 different credit cards, all these different IDs. There's probably going to be a ID card with our PHI on it, God forbid, that's going to be there. Because what's going to happen is we're going to be hit by a car, God forbid, and the ambulance driver is going to be able to click it and see, oh, this is this person's name. This is the last time the medical record. So I think health IT is going to grow. I think, you know, we're going to move to where we have, you know, this digital signature with us that's going to allow people to understand more about us, that we allow them to. Doctors are going to see our health records across it versus, and you walk in the doctor's like, well, so what's going on? What's happening? They're going to be able to look at your diagnostics and say, I don't even, you know, we're talking Star Trek kind of things. I think we're going to see in the next 5 years.
Alex Grohmann, Grohmann. I was speaking to an English major yesterday, and I get to use the fancy word dystopian future. Talk about bad things happening in the future.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, dystopian future. And he said, you know, I got two interns working for me, and they're just young kids, and they're into dystopian novels, and they really think bad things are going to happen in the future in five mm-hmm. years from now. And this whole idea of machine learning. What do you think? I'm pretty optimistic, but I realize that people are 19, 20, 22. They're not very optimistic in the future. You know, you may have electronic health records, but who's going to steal what and at what price? And what about the gap between the haves and have-nots? So you think 5 years, you think it's all going to be hunky-dory? You think this dystopian future is going to be ahead of us? How's that for scary?
Well, there's multiple different ways of looking at that. And to talk about 5 years in the future, I think, you know, the newer things that are going to be really coming out are things going to be all human articulate this. It's going to be more about the phones and, you know, what we're doing in technology. You know, in the 60s, from what I understand, everybody was looking to the future like, oh, wow, we're going to have space travel. We're going to do this. We're going to help mankind. And then if you really, those people were like, wow, what would 2016 look like? Oh, wow. You mean you can actually order stuff and then have it delivered in 2 days by clicking two things on your phone that you have in your hand, like Dick Tracy. So, are things going to be really rough in the future? Yeah, there's one way of looking at that, but the future I look at is like, okay, how are we going to make individual lives better with technology? And how is that really going to proliferate? So when you're talking about like, wow, what does it look like 1984 in the future? What is it really? I think it's going to be more like, yeah, people coming around with, like you said, just what Brian mentioned, that you're going to have very few things in your hand. Everything's going to be done by phone, even if a phone looks like it is now. You know, everything is out there. You're not going to have credit cards. Why create credit cards when you get a phone? So in terms of bad things, in terms of security, there's 1,000 different things I could go on that route. But I think in the future, the number one issue in the future in terms of cybersecurity is going to be identity. Hmm. Right now, everybody's getting breached, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, because right now everybody's putting so much information on social media. They're saying, oh, wow, here, I'm linked with someone that has the same last name as me. They look about 20 to 30 years older than me. That's probably their mom. You know, oh, okay, what's your mom's maiden name? You know, they'll look at the middle name of the mom and that's out there. You know, like, oh, here's my picture of my dog from, you know, 20 years ago. It was my first dog ever. Well, there's your dog name. This is all stuff they're getting through the social media, but it's also things that are going to be available through, you know, things such as the OPM breach, which is another whole scary topic we talk about an hour about. But I really see in the future, the biggest going to be issue is going to be identity of who people are and how we manage that.
John Dyson, if you watch TV, and I'm about to unplug my TV here in March, we're going to go cut the cable. Some of these talking heads, they talk about, well, just encryption, that's the answer. So encrypt everything, that's the answer. I think that's too easy an approach, isn't it? Here, big fancy word, too facile an approach. So what do you think? Is encryption the answer? Just encrypt everything, John. You'll be safe.
I think there's a control out there that says encrypt everything. So people jump on it and say, we're not quite sure what this encryption thing is. Maybe we just use ROT13 and you just shift all the letters down 13. You know, but it's a control and do it. Again, it comes back to what's the right thing to do. Does really all data need to be encrypted, or maybe just, you know, some social security numbers? And those are the decisions that I have to make. And to what Brian said, you need a CISO that understands the issue. They can look at it and say, listen, I don't need to encrypt everything, but here's the key things. And from a risk-based perspective, this is the stuff I need to protect. And that's encryption has a place. It's kind of the arrow in the quiver, but it's not the whole thing.
Brian Gay, do you need a CISO or do you need a robot? Do you need a CISO or do you need AI?
Well, first of all, you need a CISO that doesn't report to CIO, and you need one, you need a chief risk officer. So I'm going to quasi answer your question. What you need, you know, you need the factory of the future. You need a robot and a dog, right? And you need, you know, the robot's there to make sure the dog, the human doesn't touch anything, and the human's there to make sure the dog gets fed. So I think, you know, in the future, business is going to be much more agile, and it is, and you need humans to understand that. So again, I think that you cannot replace the role with machines anywhere. I think that's the wrong way to go, except for controls.
30-second answer for you, Alex. I was at an FCA conference, and a bunch of smart people were talking, and they said, you know, you look around the federal government, they're just preparing for the next attack. Can this help prepare people for the next attack, or is that the whole summary of the conversation today, preparing for the next attack?
Anything that's going to make someone more intelligent and give anybody better guidance will protect from attack. But however, an attack is like it's like someone in the middle of a flood, of a 100-year flood, thinking like, "Wow, I'm going to keep the water out of my house." There's 1,000 different ways that water is going to get in, so eventually it's going to happen. But however, if you're planning for the future, you're like, "Wow, I read this report on how to protect a house in a 100-year flood," and they take that and they understand what it's saying, and then they actually implement that. Yes, that could help.
Interesting. Well, we have come to the end of our discussion today. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. I'd like to thank my guest, Alex Grohman, founder and president of Seeker Consulting, John Dyson from Deloitte, and Brian Gay, president of Think Forward Consulting.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.